Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, the fastest growing B2B radio network in the country. I'm Karen Owicki, here with our producer, Grady Douglas.
Hello.
And today we are geared up for a fantastic show, an engaging conversation with Gina and John Orr with Passion for Patients. Welcome you two.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So happy to have you here today. I've had an opportunity to briefly get to know a little bit about what you're up to. Gina, let's start with you, if you won't mind. We're going to have just an engaging conversation and have you tell us a little bit about Passion for Patients. Let's start off with, what is passionforpatients.net?
Thank you, Karen. Passion for Patients is an on-site training program for medical office staff, and we focus on interpersonal and communication skills. Our goal is to bring medical etiquette and good manners back to healthcare. Patients spend about 80% of their time in the doctor's office with the staff, about 20% with the doctor, and that team doesn't have a lot of support or training around interpersonal and communication skills, and so that's our goal.
So needed.
Thank you. Thank
I know
you.
I was telling Colin, our business development guru over here earlier about what you're up to, and he said exactly that. It's critical that we have that training and that opportunity for the office staff. So it's an on-site program. I know that you mentioned to me that it's a lot of fun. What makes it fun when you have an opportunity to work with an office staff?
Well, we make each of our 12 topics highly interactive. So we have, you know, for instance, patients who like their physicians and the experience at the office are least likely to sue the doctor, even if they have bad outcomes. So we do a likability quiz just to get people thinking about, am I likable? Is the process likable? We do a lot of highly interactive, engaging exercises. We pair people up. We give them quizzes. We do a lot around communication skills, verbal and nonverbal. And so we have a lot of activities around that and tests. And people really, the aha moment is so clear on their face when they are actually doing the activity as opposed to hearing us as a talking head.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And are the doctors involved in this or is it usually the staff?
We've started this with just the staff, with just the team, and we've had several practices ask if we could do a modified retreat version for the physicians, which we are about to engage on some of that. Another area where we do our training is with firefighters because of the paramedicine model. You know, with the accountable care organizations wanting to partner with other entities so that patients are coming back to the emergency room on a repeat visit basis. Hospitals get penalized for that. Hospitals have started partnering with other entities to avoid those repeat visits. And of course, the logical place to start with that is those frequent users of 911. So we work with firefighters, and they're calling this the paramedicine model, because they will deploy, on the frequent users, they will deploy a social worker and a nurse practitioner and a first responder instead of sending out three engines and, you know, 17 EMTs or whatever it might be. So we're working with them on interpersonal and communication skills as well.
So needed.
Thank you.
All the way around, right? The emergency room tends to get filled up, if I'm not mistaken, with people who don't have those urgent emergency needs and also likely can't afford the services.
Exactly.
So this paramedicine model would help,
yes,
right?
It does.
Utilize our firefighters and our EMTs in addition to having them feel like they have somebody who's an advocate for them in the community.
Exactly. That's exactly right, Karen.
So with Passions for Patients, you're able to help those teams, the emergency responders or the on the 911 callers.
The first responders and the emergency medical technicians. You know, we do, for instance, a lot around the power of touch, tone, and space. And firefighters do a great job, and they are trained to go in and put out the fire, basically, and then exit. But there's so much more that goes in to that process. And maybe because I spent 25 years working in Sun City and saw that, you know, the sweet little old 90-year-old who just fell out of the bathtub and is lodged and can't get out, there needs to be some expertise and communication skills on how to manage that.
And for some of us, it comes natural. And others, it's a skill set that they haven't had exposure to or just really weren't born with the gift of how to be a caregiver like that. Is that what you find?
You're exactly on target. We're finding that some younger people who are accused of not understanding how to do this, they really are hungry for this training because they maybe have not been exposed to the power of touch. And we're doing a big project on the incivility in the workplace and accidental communication and what that does to the team and what that does to the patient also. We also find that some people maybe who have been taught these skills, they've gotten into their job at the office and they just get kind of burnt out. And this is a great refresher to bring them back to why they were drawn to serve in a healthcare industry.
Fantastic. Wow. And John, you must be thrilled to watch her in action. What is your favorite part about the way Passion for Patients has developed?
Well, my favorite part is the fact that Gina does not expect me to keep up with her. She's a pretty high energy person. She's kind of drafted me to help her instruct some of the classes. And years and years and years ago in my previous profession, I taught interpersonal communication at the police academy.
I saw
so
that.
So it's kind of a natural transition.
For both of you, with both of your backgrounds, mm-hmm. right? This is, can you consider this a second act for both of you and a career? I mean, you get to help out and train with your vast knowledge, military, I remember seeing, mm-hmm. As well as police force and as a judge, a municipal judge as well.
I was a justice of the peace here in Tempe when the Tempe Justice Court was the second busiest justice court in Arizona. So you learn how to treat people with kindness and respect, but keep the line moving because there are more people in line behind. And you know, these medical practices anymore are so busy. The doctors have such a short period of time with the patient. As Gina mentioned, you know, the patient, anytime someone goes to the doctor's office, you spend a lot more time with the staff than you do with the doctor.
Right. In the waiting room, right on the phone when I make my appointment, if I'm not doing it online. In the waiting room. And then, of course, when I get into the physician's room, the patient room, that I'm usually having someone check. So, of course. And then I think you actually gave a number too. I'm with my doctor for how long?
About 20%.
Of the time.
Of the time that you're at the doctor's office. And so we do this whole thing around first impressions, which could be the phone, could be the parking lot, could be the website. Second first impression could be when you walk in, and we work with the staff to realize that sometimes there is some relationship recovery that needs to take place through no fault of their own. Maybe the patient had a hard time finding the place, or with the firefighters, that dispatch call may have been routed through Phoenix and then coming out to Sun City West or something. And so sometimes a patient will come to a situation like that upset. And then that first person has to do something to kind of recover that relationship.
Right.
In fact, you know, how many times do you get frustrated just dealing with a phone tree mm-hmm. before you ever talk to a person?
Yes.
And the last thing that we want is for medical office staff to say, I'm just the receptionist. You know, in our sphere, we look at that as the director of first impressions.
Absolutely. That's like it. The secretary of a school. I used to be in education years ago, and I would always say to our secretary, you are everything to us because you're the first person they hear on the phone when they walk in to register and so on, or the complaint, you name it, or the child who's injured or in trouble. So of exactly. course, whoever is answering that phone, and now we have that precursor, as you both mentioned, the internet. Mm-hmm. So you help have them begin to think about how are they showing up online as well?
We do. And I have colleagues in this arena who are experts in that reputation that's online like that. It's not our area of expertise, but so our coaching is with the team around interpersonal and communication skills.
Yeah, this right here.
Exactly.
Looking them in the eye, the touch, the high touch, the conversation that they can manage. So that, and what is the goal then? To feel safe, to feel heard. What else am I looking for if I were someone in one of your workshops?
Well, we're finding that when you empower the team to be a trusted member of that patient's healthcare journey, that shifts the energy of the relationship tremendously. You know, we will talk with team members about when to be conversational, you know, with the patient, when to use jargon is with their provider to show how smart they are on those things. So when you start to empower the team to be a trusted and educated person on that healthcare journey for the patient, it shifts everything. And the patients really, really feel much more comfortable in that setting. You know, we worked with a urology practice in Sun City West, and you have some very young people working at the front desk, and you have older people coming in with plumbing problems. Those are awkward conversations to have. So, you know, we want to make sure that they're feeling comfortable about having those without dismissing it of, oh, you know, we hear this all the time. It's really no big deal. Because to the patient, it's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And he or she might come in and not they have to say something to somebody right away. But if they look in the eyes of the receptionist and they can automatically tell, I'm guessing that this is not a safe person for me to talk to, they're going to possibly shut down.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we see frequently is they don't even see the eyes of the receptionist because oftentimes the receptionist won't even look up from the computer. The first thing that comes out of the mouth of the healthcare professional is name, date of birth. And so we're teaching them the importance of eye contact, talking to the person, not to the computer screen. You know, in my cardiologist's office, to check out, you sit down at a desk, which is kind of a nice place where you get all your instructions. But there are two very large computer screens between me and the, so they actually see her. I've got to stand up and look.
Right. Unless she's doing her job and she's making sure that she's giving you or repositioning those screens. That's brilliant. And it's tell me a story of maybe a doctor's office that has had a great celebration to share with you after going through the training. Can you think of an example? I see a smile. So you must have at least 7 to 20,000 of them.
Well, I am thrilled to share with you that we were working with a cardiology office in Central Phoenix, and there was about 30 in this group. And we did, our first section was on the barriers to communication, verbal and nonverbal. And it was a 3-hour Friday afternoon thing, but they didn't want to leave. They were having such a good time. So our follow-up session with them was about incivility in the workplace and accidental communication. And there's a young man in that practice. He might be 30, probably 25. I think he's a medical assistant, and he's kind of round, and he's just loving this training so much. And he said, I have got to share this story. So he starts out sharing this story that, you know, we had a patient, she had a 1 o'clock appointment. We couldn't get her on the treadmill until 2:30, and she was really, really upset. He said, so I went back to my passion for patients training, and I checked in with her about every 15 minutes, and I touched her in a safe place on the top of the hand, and I would explain to her, Mrs. Jones, we're running a little bit behind today because we had an emergency. He said, so I used my connector words because we had an emergency. And then I closed my sentence with the apology. I didn't start with the apology, which can sound empty. I closed with the apology. And he said that would calm her down. But I was checking in with her every 15 or 20 minutes. So finally, when it's her turn to get on the treadmill, she's giving me the body language. Her arms are crossed. She's pointing her finger at me. She's doing all this stuff. So like you taught us, I started to do a modified mirror where I kind of imitated her in a very gentle way. And she watched me as I was being like her. And so she started to calm down a little bit to the point that she apologized to me for being so nasty. She thanked me for being so patient and compassionate. And he said, so it was just great. His 30 coworkers stood up and applauded him.
I have goosebumps from head to toe.
It sounds like we scripted that. We did not.
No.
He was so authentic. So not only did the patient have a better experience, the young man went home feeling like he was king of the world, and his coworkers acknowledged that. It just shifted everything for that practice.
And every single one of those staff members will remember that story the next time that they're feeling that they're pushed and they're anxious about the timeline and how quickly they can get somebody on the treadmill or back into a patient's room. They will remember his example and the pride that they felt. That's brilliant.
To take that one step further, if I might, we had another practice, and the woman who shared her story was, she'd been with the practice for quite some time. She was probably in her mid to late 40s, kind of nondescript, not a rock star, but a loyal plotter kind of employee. She was always there. And after about our fourth or fifth training session, she came up to me with tears in her eyes, and she said, you know, I'm practicing everything that you're teaching us. And I was kind of surprised that in her 40s that this was news to her, but it was. I'm practicing everything that you're teaching us, and I can't believe how much nicer the patients are. She said, and then when I go home, my kids are curious to hear about how my day went. And even my husband said, wow, you've had another great day at work. Tell me about it. So they realize that even though we do this training in their work setting, it's not just for work.
For life skills.
Yeah, it really is.
Interpersonal, intrapersonal as well. I heard you say both. It's an opportunity to reflect as to how am I showing up professionally in addition to how are you receiving my information and how open am I to receiving yours? Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you.
You must be so proud.
Well, I'm thrilled. And, you know, John and I were talking earlier that our curriculum is evolutionary. It's looking very different right now from what it looked like even 2 months ago, because we get such great feedback from the students. You know, with this incivility in the workplace, our session on Saturday, we had quite the conversation about diversity in the workplace.
That's becoming more and more a topic that I'm hearing in educational arenas for executive leaders all the way on down, that we have got to take a look at this generational gap per se and really misunderstandings.
You're exactly right. So the diversity isn't just the generational, it's the ethnic, it's the cultural, it's everything across. And we try to remind our students that really, whether you're from Indiana or India, you really want to be treated well. You want to be treated with kindness and respect. So there's really a lot more that draws us together than what separates us.
As long as we're focusing on that,
yes.
Right? As long as we're focusing
exactly.
on what makes mm-hmm. us similar mm-hmm. and the same versus how different are we.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. You really cover a lot of topics.
You do.
And so what does it look like if I were a physician and I was interested in helping my staff? How long is the program? Tell us a little bit about what that would look like, or does it vary?
We customize everything per practice. We worked with a very small startup allergy practice, and we had the physician and three of her four staff in their lunchroom for an afternoon. And we've also worked with very large staff where we will do some retreat models, and they break out and they'll do Saturday morning retreats because they don't want to interrupt the flow of the patient, because that's revenue. They don't want to shut down the practice for something. Typically, what we can start with is with our mystery patient assessments.
I remember you. Yeah. Tell us about that. That was fantastic. Kind of like a restaurant deal or
yes.
secret shopper.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us.
So that really percolates up some things that the leadership never sees, because when the leader walks in, everybody kind of behaves. Or, you know, it's not meant to be punitive or entrapping. It's just things that patients see when they walk in. So this one practice had several locations. So we actually did 7 mystery patient assessments. And as I was putting together the executive summary, so we give our MPAs kind of a checklist of things to look for, including first impression, second first impression, body language, eye contact, all of that. And then our MPAs write a narrative, which is very telling. So as I was assembling an executive summary for the leadership with these 7 mystery patient assessments, we actually discovered some inconsistency in protocols, some inconsistency in messaging and communication. And it was a simple way for them to go back in and just adjust a few things, or even some things that some patients, our MPAs, thought were HIPAA violations or patient privacy issues. And technically, they were not, but if they keep getting this complaint, then they wanted to adjust that so it didn't appear that there was a privacy issue. So we incorporate the mystery patient assessment depending upon how many they want. And if they have multiple locations, it's important to do multiple mystery patient assessments, because the Glendale office might look different from the Scottsdale, which looks different from Chandler, particularly if you have staff that you're rotating into the different locations and there's team issues with that, that will percolate up as well.
You mentioned the turnover. I would imagine that this would help. I mean, the more I feel comfortable working in my office and with my team, and the more joy I have in working with patients, the longer I'm likely to stay, correct?
Exactly.
So are you finding also that this is helping with longer-term employees?
We are. We're finding that when the team is more collaborative and empowered, and we do some examples on, you know, how to resolve issues among and between each other. And tell the one story about where we had the staff person who was offending with her good morning greetings, and it wasn't intended to be that way.
A woman basically began her work day by going through the workplace saying, "Hi, welcome to work. And she, you know, that's the way she greeted everybody. Well, finally, after Passion for Patients training, one of the employees came over to her and said, "You know, I owe you an apology. I feel very bad, but I have really disliked you ever since day one."
Because of the greeting.
And she said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, because you go around and you say, 'Welcome to work.'" And the employee said, "I'm a single mom, and I have to drop my kids off at daycare at a particular time, and I scramble to work, but I am always 10 or 15 minutes late. And I always thought you were just being sarcastic.
Oh, my.
Making fun of me for being late to work." And so the two of them sat down and said, "Well, I'll tell you what, instead of 8 to 5, why don't you work 8:15 to 5:15? We'll take care of the problem."
Can you imagine?
And these are things where the employees bring it to us afterwards and say, this is what we did, this is what we found. And, you know, there used to be a presiding judge here in Maricopa County who had a phrase, put a live snake on the table. And, you know, put that uncomfortable, difficult situation on the table so you can discuss it, dismantle it, fix it.
Right.
And in fact, just the other day, we were doing a class at a practice where we were talking about incivility in the workplace. And we got on the issue of diversity. And in fact, one uncivil behavior that people don't even think of is excluding behavior.
What do you mean by that? Yeah.
Where two people are involved in something and they exclude other employees. The most common way that surfaces is in language. We live in the desert Southwest. There are a lot of people here who are bilingual, and in reality, 90% of the people who are bilingual speak English and Spanish.
Right.
So if you're in the break room and two of your coworkers walk into the break room and they strike up a conversation in Spanish and you don't speak Spanish, you are excluded. Gina has...
Not intentionally necessarily, but just culturally and or a tighter connection between the two of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What we call accidental communication.
Okay, right.
And if you do take that wrong, and, you know, I mean, there's a possibility they're talking about you. They're more than likely they're not. They're just carrying on their conversation, perhaps in their primary language. But if you end up being offended, and then 20 minutes later, one of those two employees needs a hand because of workload or something, you're less likely to lend a hand because they didn't include me.
All on a miscommunication or an assumption about being excluded.
Mm-hmm. Gina has a great story that she tells about going to have her nails done that follow right into this.
Yes.
And so most of the women in these practices can relate because we get our nails done. And I happen to love my nail technician. She's been doing my nails for 4 years. And we talk about, you know, the intimate zone, which is 18 inches. And you have that in healthcare. You have that when you're getting your nails done. And she's holding my hands and she'll turn to a coworker and speak in her native language, which is not mine.
Sure.
It's typically Vietnamese. And we will draw that parallel in our teachings. And they all kind of get that. We really work with the teams, particularly in these difficult situations, on ways to have conversations without being accusatory or punitive or defensive, and language to use that will invite a better conversation. And when, you know, nothing's hanging fire, we spend a lot of time on working with our teams to be introspective. How can I do a better job? But outwardly focus so that my patient has a better experience. And they just pause and one of the exercises that we use is identical words, different meanings.
Oh,
identical
sure.
words. So we have a sentence that has 8 words in it, and we read through it because each time you say the sentence, a different word is emphasized, has a totally different meaning at the end of that sentence. And it's a huge aha moment for people.
And what I heard John saying with the snake on the table, or however that saying goes, is through your training, you're giving these teammates permission to then come to each other when there's an area of concern.
Mm-hmm.
You've given them a common language, a common way to behave and show up as a team and individually, and also permission to say, hey, this isn't going right, or maybe even checking in. You know, I noticed you did XYZ. This is how it felt to me, or what it meant. Am I right? And then they have an opportunity to clean it up and fix things going forward.
And that's a perfect analogy that we say, you know, when you said this, it made me feel like this. And that's so it's not punitive, it's not accusatory, because nobody can really argue with how you're feeling about something. When you say this, it makes me feel like this. I don't think that's what you mean, but that's what it makes me feel like. And then people can, that just levels the playing field for discussion so that it doesn't get... Well, sometimes it gets emotional because they kiss and make up.
Yes.
That's always a good
yes,
outcome.
Yes, you know you have a win when that happens.
Exactly.
And the win on a Friday afternoon, my goodness, that you're doing a training Friday at 3, I think you said.
Yes,
and they are eager to stay and learn more and more. Celebrating along the way. That there is a grand testimony.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved in this? I know I mentioned this feels like a second act from my perspective because you both have had such successful careers. How did you land here, Gina?
Well, I did 25 years in fundraising. fundraising in the West Valley. So I worked with members of the Greatest Generation who gave wonderful gifts to build the Boswell Hospital, the Del Webb Hospital, all that healthcare in the West Valley. I was so impacted by the sense of propriety by these 90 and 95-year-old people. And I also was closely connected with the physicians who were providing healthcare. So I watched as the pressure on the physicians to have more and more volume and traffic in their practices just to pay the bills because formulas for reimbursement were changing so drastically. So I watched the pressure on the physicians in their practices. I saw what that did to these sweet, wonderful people who were so generous and what that experience was like for them at the most vulnerable time in their lives. And then it became personal for me. My mother took a fall in St. Louis. She was in a well-known teaching hospital and 84 years old. And this was 10 months after we lost my dad. And she broke her hip and she had some cracked vertebrae and a compression in her thoracic area. She was in ICU for 4 days, got bumped 3 times for surgery, and her attending physician never touched her.
Oh.
She came into her room twice only and would turn her back to my mom and work on her iPad. And that was my tipping point.
You would think, you said female physician, you would think just by nature that she would be more nurturing, but not the case.
Not the case at all. So I gathered all of these things that I had learned from these wonderful donors about manners and sense of propriety and why manners matter. We talk about manners and how manners are created, and they are created to make things right, and you have to practice them. We like to tell our students that you're working in a medical practice, but this is also your practice of passion for patients.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Now, you mentioned just a moment ago, and I'm going to look to see if I can find my note. You mentioned how practitioners are going to be repaid. It's beginning to change. There was an act in 2015. Can you speak to that?
There is.
I looked at it a little bit ahead of time before our conversation today, but I'm not sure it made sense to me.
But it's very complicated. It's confusing. It's called MACRA, which is basically a Medicare reimbursement policy that's going to change the way that physicians are reimbursed. And it's been on this track for a couple of years. And now what they're doing now and measured through this MACRA product, it will impact their reimbursements in 2019. And there's four different areas that physician practices will be rated on. And one of them is they're going to be rated on more of a fee for value instead of a fee for service. So in the past, physicians were getting fewer reimbursements, so they would up the volume so they'd have more reimbursements. Now they're going to be ranked on fee for value. So it's really about the patient experience, quality. About the patient experience. And it's starting as a Medicare product. And typically, private payers follow that formula in about 12 to 18 months.
I did see that. Mm-hmm. So really, our doctors are going to have to start working harder to stay with the patients and be somebody that we want to continue to come see.
Exactly.
Not only our doctor, but this whole idea of the entire team within the doctor's office, regardless, across the board, right?
Across the board. Starting with Medicare, there's a component of the quality piece on this. It's called practice improvement projects. And, the teams who we coach get the least amount of training outside of their medical assisting training. But if you look at curriculum for most of that, it's task-oriented, how to room a patient, how to take a blood pressure, electronic medical records. It's not about interpersonal communication.
Not how to build that relationship.
Not how to build the relationship.
Again, safety. Feeling safe, feeling heard, right? That's what I keep thinking about my own experience.
And there's statistics about problems that take place in the treatment of patients, especially if there's been an issue around incivility in the workplace. And, what was the statistic? 65% of team members who leave jobs do so because of incivility in the workplace. So what happens with the team absolutely spills out to what happens with the patient.
Absolutely. Wow. I'm fascinated. I'm really fascinated. I had an emergency room experience, ended up being in the hospital for 5 days a couple of years ago. And outside of having my own children, I've never been in the hospital before. And those were happy occasions. Mm-hmm. This was an emergency surgery. And I was thrilled that the emergency room staff and then the staff afterwards were truly there. I felt tenderly held. I felt safe. I felt cared for. I felt informed. I can only imagine what it feels like to not have any of that, especially if I'm elderly or I'm there by myself.
Alone. Well, hospitals typically have their own service excellence departments or patient experience departments because there's this rating called HCAHPS, and that definitely impacts the reimbursement into the hospital, and that is all about patient experience. That has not rolled out to the practices until this point with MACRA.
Which is why you're doing what you're doing. I hadn't thought that was a beautiful segue to wrap it back up around to how important this is for the doctors mm-hmm. in their offices. Mm-hmm. In my mind, it was the same. But so the hospitals are held to a different standard currently than the mm-hmm. medical practices.
Mm-hmm. And so doctors are not making what they, you know, everybody thought doctors are wealthy, and many can be, but there's this other piece where their reimbursements are pennies on the dollar. And so everybody's trying to work to make that better. And what we're focused on is the patient experience, just because of my experience of working with generations, you know, the greatest generation. But then we see what this also does to the team, and we're thrilled about that outcome as well. It does wonderful collaborative and team building work for the practice, which saves them money because the turnover starts to reduce, and the, you know, people calling in sick and all of that. So
yes, I can only imagine how much value you bring to each of the practices you work with.
We hope so.
I noticed on your website too that there's a little survey. So if I'm curious and I'm listening today and I have my own practice, did I see a survey where I can kind of do a self-assessment?
Yes, you can go in and there's certain questions that, and we hope that you'll be honest, certain questions to ask to see if this might be something that would help your team if your patient satisfaction scores are low. And doctors typically know that there's so many reporting agencies in addition to Yelp, but Health Grades and other places where patients can report their experience. We are in a consumer world right now where we all look for those kinds of reviews to figure out where we're going to go buy our next toothbrush practically. So they can do that. So yes, we would invite people to take that survey to see if we can have a you know, no obligation conversation about what this might look like for them and how we might customize this if they would like to engage in the training.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
So before we close out, I would love to hear where we can get a hold of you, if you'd share your website and any other way that we might be able to have people find you.
We would invite you to take a walk through our website at passionforpatients.net, and patients is plural, passionforpatients.net. My phone number, and you may call me anytime, is 602-677-1614, or my email is gina@passionforpatients.net.
Ah, fantastic. Thank you both, John and Gina, for being here. I'm intrigued and excited to hear everything that you're doing on behalf of our medical practices here in the Phoenix area. And that leads me to one last question I want to ask. So do you do training outside of the Metro Phoenix area? Oh, I see smiles again. I love that. I'm closing, and now I'm asking another question.
Well, speaking of closing, Gina is in the process of closing a contract with Health City in Grand Cayman.
Oh, well, of all places, if you're going to pick a place outside of Phoenix, let's pick the Grand Cayman.
Oh, yeah. She's going to Tucson next month and Seattle. We go
where the work will take you. Yeah.
And to those out-of-state people, just for one more quick second, we're designing and finalizing a train-the-trainer program so that people on site will have this information where they can, you know, peer level can do some refresher activities to keep this culture shift going.
Fantastic. Really much needed in the world. And the Train of the Trainer program, I'm willing to bet, will help you impact that many more offices worldwide.
So.
One more time with your website, please.
Passionforpatients.net.
And fantastic. So on behalf of Phoenix Business Radio X, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people, I'm Karen Nowicki. We'll see you next time.